Welcome to the Adotat Show, where today we're diving into the confluence of marketing, PR, and ad tech with industry expert Bill Daddy of DBC Communications. Get ready for an insightful exploration into the fusion of these pivotal fields, unlocking strategies that define successful brand communication in our digital world. Join us and know more than you did yesterday.
Deserve to win when it matters most. Facing multi-billion dollar bet the company litigation? No problem. That's why we're here. Trackman Amin, LLP, is a true legal powerhouse.
Welcome to the Adotat Show, folks. I am Pesach Latin at the helm. Joining us today is Bill Daddy, the brains behind DBC Communication. So, Bill, how is it really going? With the ever turbulent world of ad tech and marketing, have you stumbled on the serene oasis, or are you just holding on like the rest of us?
Pesach, we're chugging along. I think one of the great things about our little industry is that it's constant change and transformation and, constant need to try to determine how to best engage with end users. For us as an agency, whether the market is up, whether the market is down, there's always need to engage and need to communicate more effectively. So for us, it's been great. We have no complaints. It's an interesting niche to be a part of.
So everyone likes to claim that they have the best revolutionary solution. How does DBC Brand Communication ride into town and not just get noticed, but become the sheriff?
Yeah, okay. Well, I appreciate being the sheriff. It's always a good position to be in. I think what we've been able to do here is have a unique focus on ad tech, martech, and insights. It's all we do. When I have travel accounts, I have cannabis accounts, this is all we focus on. And it does have so many unique characteristics as an industry, and obviously requires good in-depth understanding of data, of analytics, of platforms, and that's what the agency represents. And I think just our longevity, we've been at this now since 2005, having seen so much change within the industry, being connected with so many people, we're kind of in a unique vantage point. When we speak with different segments of the industry that we represent, you're a data provider, you're a platform, you're an analytics company, they tend to see their unique part of the world. I think because we represent such a broad swath of associations and companies within the industry, we could see it from more of a unique vantage point and understand exactly how the pieces are fitting together. And I think more importantly, the direction where things are heading and how they're evolving. And I think that's, the basis of the council we're able to provide and help people engineer the perceptions that are going to help drive their business. So I think it's unique from that perspective.
How do you sift through the buzzword bonanza and find the genuine gold mines for clients?
Yeah, well, we try to avoid the buzzword bonanza and the acronym jungle that's out there. I mean, look, ultimately, what we're trying to help our clients do is better understand their end user or their target's needs or concerns. And we're very much of the perspective that when you go forth with marketing, it's not about beating your chest or hanging your shingle out there. It's trying to identify in a unique and proprietary way that you understand the challenges, the concerns that your end users have, and help guide our clients to take their marketing promotion initiatives from that perspective. Speak more about the target than about yourself to fulfill what really is the true role of marketing, right? Which is to foster engagement through establishment of relevance. I think it's hard sometimes for folks within this industry. There is a tendency to want to go out with the game changer, first to market, groundbreaking type stuff. And, ultimately, that may or may not be true. I don't think the end user has a great ability to validate that independently. But people are coming to market because they have concerns, they have problems, they have challenges. And they want to work with entities that they feel uniquely understand what those challenges are. And it's best from a marketing promotion perspective to go forth with that rather than go forth with jargon that creates barriers and frictions with your end users, or utilization of acronyms that, in reality, a lot of people just don't understand what the hell you're talking about.
Right. I would say that we have more echoes than a yodeling contest in the Grand Canyon. So how do you ensure that it's not just another echo?
Yeah, again, it's got to be predicated based upon an understanding of the target. And, we counsel people to spend a lot of time before you go forth with marketing, both primary and secondary research. Speak to the internal stakeholders, speak to your external stakeholders, get a really firm sense of exactly what your specific end user or target is facing, what they need, so you can understand what is going to be relevant for them. And ultimately, that's going to be the great differentiator, right? Because the function of marketing is to bring people into a conversation with you. You can't really establish full education, full product differentiation based upon marketing. People have limited time and attention. Most of the marketing that's out there is a lot of sameness, so there's no differentiation. The way that you want to be able to really differentiate and build that predisposition towards preference is, again, by reflecting what your target is really facing in their business.
Yeah, I've heard more recently that a lot of the problems with ad tech marcom is that it doesn't try to solve a problem. That people just are saying, you know, I hired so-and-so or I have this new product, but they don't identify what the problem is and how the ad tech promotes it. Can you share a tale where DBC outsmarted in an ad tech duel with nothing but your wits?
No. Well, we can't speak to specific client work, certainly, but, you know, let me give you a small example. We have a company that is doing fantastic work in helping entertainment and sports talent deal with the issue of deepfakes. They've got a great technology, but as with many emerging type of platforms and brands, it's difficult to get people to focus on what you're offering and to take them through, product education, if you would. So rather than going forth and just saying, hey, we'd love to tell you about this, we just did a very small thing for them. Established a webinar that spoke to the challenges and opportunities that are being faced in AI talent utilization. And the specific reason for doing that was not just to produce great content or explore a topic that is complicated and very important, but it provided value to the end users that they were looking to engage with, because we were able to reach out to them, not a time where we're marketing or promoting, but inviting them to provide their perspective and thought leadership participation in a webinar. So a very simple technique, much more focused on delivering value to the people that they're looking to engage with. And by virtue of doing that, then all those end users who participated within the webinar were receiving an education about our client as well, too. So it's ultimately trying to identify what can we do through marketing, through promotion, that not only informs, provides education, but provides some type of value to the party that you're looking to engage with. So it doesn't require a lot of money to be spent, but it requires some thought in terms of how do we get this into a more reciprocal relationship whereby, yes, we want to educate you about our product, our platform. We will want to do something to deliver a value to you. We want to put it in a situation whereby it's not purely just promoting to you, but something that has a bit more meaningful relationship and conversation.
How do you balance the scales between innovative advertising technologies and the art, the old age art, of building genuine brand connections?
Yeah, I think it's difficult, you know, within this industry and with this environment to establish genuine connections with the brand, because a lot of what you were discussing, you know, can be rather relatively complex. I think a lot of end users get lost quickly within technology. I think, you know, a lot of folks sometimes are not terribly transparent in terms of methodology. So it ends up creating some friction with the end users. And I think, you know, the best way to go about it is what Paysec you were referring to, is identification proactively for the end user as to what problem we are solving. There's too much of a tendency, as you said, to go to market saying, here's what we do, here's what we offer, and putting the onus upon the audience that you're looking to communicate to make the connection as to how that is going to help their business. You know, I think that brand differentiation and the brand preference that could be developed really has to come from clear communication and articulation of, here's how we're going to help you solve a problem. Here's how we're going to help you advance your business. And once that connection is made, then you can provide the education in terms of exactly the mechanics of how we're going to go about that. But you can't put something out and hope people make that connection to understanding how it's going to address their specific problems.
The data-driven narratives, I think, of the industry are as dry as a vermouth martini. So how do you shake up a story that doesn't need a chaser?
Yeah, well, I mean, again, data in abstract, can be very difficult to connect to. And let's face it, even though we're in a B2B environment, you know, we're still obviously marketing to human beings. And, you know, we hear over and over again when we do some of the research we do for brand platform development work that the end user either doesn't really understand data or technology that's being provided to them, or that they'll listen to a very rational argument as to why it might be superior data or superior platform, and then they make a purely emotional decision. You know, the typical situation is when you've got a category that has traditional market leaders, and then you get challenger brands, and they have an incredible approach to solving a problem. But the end user will go with the category leader, and primarily for the reason of they don't want to be criticized for being wrong. So I think it's important to keep in mind that while a lot of the arguments that are made can be made on methodology, on innovation and technology, on quality of data, it's still human beings making decisions, and they tend to make emotional decisions as much as rational, action to rational arguments. So it's very important that, you know, we don't divorce ourselves from some of the principles that work in B2C marketing when we're talking about B2B marketing. You know, understand really what are going to be those triggers towards seeing a particular data provider or technology platform as being uniquely relevant, and understanding what those emotional drivers are going to be. Because again, it's a very complex marketplace. You know, I think there's a lot of confusion out there. I mean, we regularly at conferences hear people saying things up on panels that we know are not quite right. I think everyone is, you know, ultimately being human beings, reluctant to identify that they understand something. People don't really say, I don't know what you're talking about, or I don't understand this. It leads to a lot of misconceptions and confusion out there in the marketplace, and makes it more difficult for marketers as a result.
How do you combat the innovation inflation, ensuring that solutions are both fresh and factual?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, not everything can be an innovation. Innovation is often incremental rather than monumental. And I think what happens is that...
Well, my favorite word now is... I just forgot the word. I'm so glad I can edit this. Quantum. Everything's a quantum leap.
Quantum leap.
But quantum means something really small.
Exactly.
Well, I see all these press releases. This is a quantum leap. And I'm going, but quantum means small.
Well, you know, look, it's about that whole premise of going to market and saying something like that.
Right.
The relatively naive assumption that the receiving end, the audience that you're talking to, is going to say, wow, really? This must be incredible. Whereas the reality is, if you say that to most people, you're creating friction. It's analogous to going on a dating app and saying, I'm the best looking person out there. And it's, you know, like,
you need other people to say you're the best looking, like ex-wives and girlfriends, right?
Exactly. So, I mean, I think that actually creates friction because, you know, you're forcing the audience then to consider something that they're going to be naturally skeptical about. And that's not the way to start out a relationship. So it may sound good to you. It may sound appealing. But get the facts out there. Help people understand why this is going to aid their business in a unique and proprietary way. And they'll come to that conclusion on their own. Marketing is about engineering perceptions. You know, you can't put a conclusion out there because human beings are skeptical. They're going to push back on it. What you want to do is put out the evidence that leads to an inevitable conclusion. I mean, ultimately, that is much more effective. If you feel that you've come to a judgment on a data provider on a platform on your own, it's going to be much more deeper, have greater significance and meaning to you than if someone tried to feed that to you as a conclusion, as a point of engagement. You know, it's like anything. It's like meeting people on the street. I mean, if you meet someone and you walk up to them and say, hey, I'm the greatest person ever invented, I mean, they're going to be skeptical. It's not the way to start a relationship. But if you meet someone, you start asking them about themselves, you try to learn something about them, well, then you've got the basis, you know, potentially for a relationship, and that individual will see you as, you know, an individual that they want to spend time with because you're interested in them. You know, and I think the principle holds here for marketing and ad tech and martech as well. I think we just tend to lose sight that, you know, these are human beings and they have anxieties, they have concerns, you know, and they react in emotional ways. And I think that's often discounted in this push towards quantum leap, towards, you know, we're the best, we're groundbreaking.
Right. Well, I think people have lost that you have to build relationships through storytelling. You can't just send out these press releases that say, we're the best, we created something new. You need to assume that also your current clients and potential clients want to hear your story.
It is.
Because then they'll believe that you've been around for a while. Then they'll believe that you're stable. Then they'll believe that you're maybe perhaps the best. But if you're just coming out of nowhere with this press release that says we think we're the best.
It's naive. It's a naive approach. Yeah. And, you know, as you've spoken to with some of your guests on prior episodes, look, marketing is about selling, right? This is a sales function. And as any good salesperson knows, you have to make the customer your friend first. You've got to build a relationship. You can't come out of the blue and start asking for a sale. You've got to make some investment in it. You know, and these press releases that don't make any connection to end user needs, don't make any identification in terms of challenges or concerns, don't make any effort to really explain how this is going to help advance your business, they're just meaningless. And, you know, what happens too is that because there is such little differentiation in the marketplace in terms of how people are promoting themselves, it ends up commoditizing, you know, certain segments, certainly when it comes to data. You know, there's always an issue out there in the marketplace in terms of, you know, data quality. And, you know, when it comes down to it, and we hear this over and over again, the data I use could be a better quality, but it's so much more expensive. Is it really worth it? What I've got is good enough.
Why do you think that the line between marcom and marketing has changed so much?
Well, I think because it's not valued sufficiently. And, you know, I think there's not only a disconnect between marcom and marketing, but I think even more significantly between marketing and sales.
Right.
You know, we hear over and over again from companies that the folks in marketing don't have much connection or communication with the people that's developed. You know,
right.
It's astounding. And, you know, consequently, what we oftentimes find out is that marketing has invested time in a platform and messaging framework and positioning, and it goes out the door. When folks hit, sales, because in a business development environment, most salespeople will say what they feel is necessary to advance, a particular opportunity, and it causes cognitive dissonance. Marcom and marketing need first and foremost to be more closely aligned. It's so hard to establish a brand position, messaging, and equity in the marketplace. You have so few opportunities to really get that done for players that are out here and the distractions that exist. If you're not operating from a position of consistency and uniformity, and message delivery from marketing to marcom and then through to sales and business development, you really stand no chance. And gaining that alignment internally, support alignment against uniform messaging and then consistent application of that with frequency, with variety, it is the only way to move forward. And I think it's one of the critical issues. And, you know, we see companies all the time speaking about themselves very differently based upon the environment, based upon who they're speaking to.
There's been a lot of talk about using employees as ambassadors. How do you keep them in check? Because I've noticed a lot, especially lately, you see the people who've been in the industry for 20 years talking about the product completely different than their brand communications team or their marketing team. How do you rein those people in?
Well, I don't think it's a question of reining people in. I think it's more so a question of gaining or helping to build emotional investment. You know, what are the critical things when we can brand platform work is to get a baseline understanding of how people internally are viewing the brand or the company. And inevitably is very different.
I could just tell you from talking to like the VP of sales versus the marketing team, I often get completely different messages about what, not just about what their product is, but what's important with their product. Yeah. And so I will go back to the marketing team. I'll be like, I just spoke to your vice president of sales and they just told me everything you're saying makes no sense to them.
Well, you know,
and they'll go back and they'll say the same thing and they just don't seem to be talking to each other.
You know, we try to start from a position of what business are you really in? You know,
right.
None of it is not what do you sell, what do you offer, what does the technology do? When you macro it up, what business are you really in? To try to find...
Do all employees have to be involved, though?
Yes.
Beyond the marketing team, especially now in the age of social media?
Well, what you tend to lose sight of, not you, what the industry tends to lose sight of is that there's touch points with the brand and the company that sometimes are beyond what you had planned for or beyond what you directly control. I mean, as we all know, when we interact with various companies, it could be a casual conversation at a conference, right? It could be their website. It could be their social media.
Right.
There are so many different touch points that sometimes you don't fully take into consideration. And the casual conversations that employees have, you know, with the industry are a big part of that because they're humanized at that point. And, you know, by and large, they're organic conversations. So if we can find a common point in terms of how all employees, internal stakeholders, view what it is that they do and what they're trying to accomplish. We take into account what their current perspective of that brand's equity is, and then begin to build from that point. At least everyone feels they have a degree of emotional investment. You can't come back with a messaging framework or a platform that is so divorced from how people currently see the company. They'll never accept it, never internalize it, and they'll revert back to what they believe. So it's got to be an organic build in terms of not only what your equity is in the marketplace currently, but what internal stakeholders believe that equity to be. Because it's, as you're alluding to, it's absolutely critical that you get employees speaking about the company and the business in a similar, uniform, and consistent way. And that's the challenge. It needs to be reinforced. You need to get the feedback from those folks, and you got to make sure that it's internalized and believed, not because it's been dictated, but they believe, they have an emotional investment in that position.
Can you recount a time when DBC's storytelling prowess turned a potential flop into a standing ovation? Without calling out a client, of course.
No, my lord, I have to go back, Pesach, and think. I mean, it's as you know, it's coming upon 20 years. I would have to give that some specific thought, but it's always an ongoing.
Has there ever been a client that you just turned down? You were just like, "There's no way I can market this product."
Not that we didn't market. There have been clients that just would not take counsel. Direction. And we're not going to be fruitful, and it just becomes difficult to assist people. I think within this space, you face the challenge often of a lot of these companies are entrepreneurial driven. Entrepreneurs sometimes have that challenge of having been so in control of every aspect of their company. They think it extends to other disciplines where they may not have as much experience. And sometimes it's difficult for entrepreneurs to take counsel and absorb it. Especially in areas that, they may not have expertise in. I mean, we've got incredibly smart people within this industry who've just done mind-blowing work in terms of what they've been able to develop. But it doesn't mean that they're good marketers,
Right.
It may not be their skill set. So it's, sometimes a bit of a challenge getting entrepreneurs to understand that.
What has been an aha moment, that instant when everything clicked? And was it really more profound than when you learned you were mispronouncing GIF?
What was be an aha moment? I think it's going to be more evolutionary. And it's been really just over the course of time, spending countless hours analyzing messages that people are putting forth and just coming to realize the disconnect. My background comes out of B2B, B2C. So I did a lot of consumer work. I've worked in every category from financial services to pharma, to health and beauty aids, and health and beauty aids is such an interesting parallel to this industry in a sense, because when it comes down to it, moisturizers, color cosmetics, there's not a lot of great differentiation between these products. But what they excel at is understanding what are the emotional motivations of the end user and how to connect more effectively to those. And, I think for me, the aha moment in conducting this was coming to realize that there's not a great difference between what we're doing in ad tech and what we're doing in HBA, because it is, so critical that you really understand the target's motivations and find creative ways to connect to them. And I think that's happened, over the course of time, and just looking at, how marketing is conducted and taking a look at, endless positions that people utilize and messaging frameworks and understanding that there was a significant disconnect happening there.
In a battle of wits, ad tech's biggest challenge, what's your secret weapon? I'm guessing it's probably not a lightsaber, but you can surprise me.
Yeah, I would say the secret weapon for us is having a more macro view and understanding of where the marketplace is and where it may be heading. I think, you know, in the day-to-day, and this is true of every industry, people tend to get a little myopic because they're dealing with the challenge of the week or the challenge of the month and not taking time to step back and macro up and understand really, you know, what the implications of their product are or how
are we chasing trends too much?
Yeah, and I think there's always a tendency to do that. And, you know, while it's
the next metaverse AI / whatever.
Yeah, and I think it takes people off focus and off strategy.
Because I've noticed like all these companies that were weeks before not AI companies now have a .AI ending, and there's suddenly AI.
Yeah, it's a desire to be left out. You know, and, you know, I think a lot of it just comes down to the fact that a lot just don't have a strategy. They're not even sure what a strategy is. And, you know, the desire just to be visible and to be relevant through association with what might be topical at the moment, which there's nothing inherently wrong with doing that, but it has to fit within an overall strategy that you're applying over the long term and that you're being consistent within. You know, if you begin to chase things as they emerge, go back NFTs, now AI, what happens is you don't have any baseline to be able to assess, is what I'm doing working? And if not, why? Because you're constantly redirecting your focus and attention and resources and getting out messages into the marketplace that may not necessarily be connected. So you have no ability then at that point to go back and assess really, you know, what is working for me and what is not. But, you know, I think we'll always see folks wanting to chase the bright shiny thing just because it receives so much attention in the short term.
What's your go-to beverage? Does it reflect your marketing strategy?
Yeah, my go-to beverage depends upon, yeah, it does reflect marketing strategy because it's highly dependent upon occasion and situation. Certainly my go-to beverage during the day is going to be water.
Right.
I want to stay hydrated. My go-to beverage for when I want to do some deep consideration and thinking is going to be a Negroni because it's a little bit more applicable towards contemplation. And
So classic and smooth.
Yeah, classic and smooth. It's the right combination of bitter and sweet.
So Negroni, wow, that's like
So we all grew up drinking those. So I mean, you know, much like marketing, it depends upon the occasion. It depends upon what you're looking to accomplish and achieve. And it's situational.
I want to hear the Bill Duddy's origin story. Was there a light bulb moment, or did you wander into marketing like a lost tourist?
You know, I started as a child, and I have no idea why. Fascinated by media, fascinated how people access information and how they process it and how it impacts their actions. So I started from an early age wanting to be a journalist. And I've worked with organizations from CNN to McNeil Lehr Report, WPIX Television, worked at a trade publication, Consumer Electronics Monthly, covering the, at the time, very highly profitable world of digital calculators and digital watches. An industry that was, you know, Casio and Texas.
I'm about to say, I grew up on the Casio. That was the coolest watch to have. I got the Casio, and I remember I didn't do any math on it. The buttons are way too small. But I loved it. I was the coolest kid around.
I used to go to
CES. At least that week.
And that was the big growth category. And within the span of a year or two, as banks started giving away calculators for free, that market just completely evaporated. And, you know, it's a good example of an industry being so myopic in terms of how do we increase sales this week, not seeing really what was coming down the pike, ultimately being able to adjust. You know, so I worked in journalism before heading into communications. Big fan.
You know, both sides.
Both sides. Well, I mean, I love...
So you're used to all the BS pitches. So...
But I was always fascinated how news is identified, how it's organized, how it's reported. I find that process, you know, to be ultimately fascinating. I'm a big fan of Marshall McLuhan. For a good period of time, I was teaching a course called Introduction to Media Studies over at Stern College, part of Yeshiva University.
My daughter went there.
Yeah, and introducing the girls to Marshall McLuhan and understanding media and just trying to help them understand how the way that we access and process information actually has an influence over our cognitive process itself.
Right.
I find that all fascinating. So that's how I got into this. And as I said, I worked in a number of different industry verticals. In fact, when we started the agency back in 2005, initially we were a pharma agency. But not too long into it, we had the opportunity to work with TNS Media Intelligence, which was then subsequently acquired by WPP, rolled into Kantar. And today we still represent all U.S. divisions of Kantar. And I just thought that the collection of competitive media intelligence and the application of it for decision making was just absolutely fascinating. It was such a interesting utilization of data for decision making purposes. And from that point on, just all of our roster eventually became advertising, ad tech, martech, and insights. So I come from it from a perspective of just being fascinated in terms of how information impacts decision making, how people access it, how it impacts their motivation to actions, and just impacts their overall cognitive processes.
Do you have a book that's been your marketing Bible guiding you through the highs and lows? And please don't say green eggs and ham, okay?
No, I guarantee you I will not say green eggs and hams. I will say
that it's about persuasion, but
it's ultimately about persuasion and one of probably the best, easiest to understand examples of how to approach it. I still love Understanding Media by Marshall McLuhan because, and I'll go back, and it's a very challenging text to read. Because it's very academic in nature, it's very dense. And I don't agree with everything that McLuhan had said, but I mean, his ability, back in the 1960s, to step back and really understand exactly, how media and information changes things and what media actually is. He always contends that a light bulb is media, is a form of media. But even his perspective that, the Western tradition, which was much more based on written information than oral traditions, led towards individuality and individual initiative because you're experiencing accessing information in a singular, in a private setting, rather than the oral tradition where you're listening to other people react as well, too. So I'll go back and read Understanding Media and portions of it from time to time because it's just an excellent reminder as to ultimately, he's addressing media, but ultimately what marketing is and what it's looking to achieve. It's not this dissemination of just information or product education. It's about engagement. It's about trying to establish connections in a meaningful way that delivers some value to the end user and that's going to want to motivate them to find out more and to engage with you and be predisposed towards you. And I think, McLuhan's approach to having a real macro level understanding of how media impacts culture and society is just a great reminder from time to time in terms of how we should go about our business and marketing.
What's a piece of marketing advice that was so bad it was good, or that was so good it was bad? Something like always be closing, but for people who hate sleep.
Oh, my Lord. I have to give that some serious consideration. A piece of marketing advice that was so bad that it was good. I wouldn't say it's marketing advice that is bad, but we have a tendency to maybe overcomplicate things. And, when it comes down to it, and I'll refer to Mr. Stewart from MMA, who was on your podcast, just getting back down to that, marketing is about selling. It's about selling goods and the fundamentals and his emphasis in terms of how marketers tend to get away from the fundamentals. It's not advice that's bad nor good, but it sounds so simple on the face of it, but I do think sometimes we tend to overcomplicate this process and get away from exactly what it is we're trying to accomplish. So not directly answering your question, but I think that's, ultimately the most important here.
If AdTech Marcom was a sport, what position would DBC be playing? Are you the quarterback, the coach, or the cheerleader keeping everyone's spirits up? Or are you the streaker disrupting the game and getting all the attention?
Oh, my Lord, I never want to be the streaker disrupting the game. I think, it's a little bit of both, of all of those, actually, depending upon the situation. But, ultimately, we'd like to see ourselves as the quarterback because we're helping to make, those in-game decisions and executing against it as well, too. What we oftentimes see with consulting companies as, as brilliant as some of those people are, it's dropping in advice and then heading for the hills and leaving others to implement that advice. And I think that's, a real danger because you don't get to see what the real world implications and impact of the counsel you're providing is. So, we're much more so, I think, in that quarterback situation. of helping to bring strategy forward, improve upon it, and then enacting it, implementing it, and based upon what's happening in real time, to adjust it, making sure that we're staying on course, that we're staying true to the strategy that was developed.
What's your take on the future of ad tech? Are we heading towards a utopia or a dystopia?
Oh, I think we're heading towards a little bit of a reckoning. And I think,
when do we get jetpacks?
They're coming around the corner. There's a great band out of Scotland called We Were Promised Jetpacks.
Yes, I've heard them too. Yes.
And they're great live too.
I think there's only been like two bands from Scotland. U2 yes. And them.
There's a couple of good ones. But
U2 is from Ireland. I'm sorry.
Ireland, yes. U2's Ireland.
Yeah, what was it?
Big Country came out of Scotland.
What was that? Oh, crud. There was that. There were like twins that came out of Scotland.
Wow, or,
10,000. I forgot what it was called.
My prior life, I was a musician. So I could talk about
that. What do
that.
You play?
Primarily guitar. I started out playing a 4-string ukulele when I was a kid because I couldn't get my hand around a standard neck.
Right.
But then I was taught as a jazz guitarist. But then when I was playing and had great opportunity to play CBs a number of times, it was more post-punk.
So what does the day in the life of a media mogul like yourself look like?
Wow, it's a lot of taking a look at what's happening within the news cycle,
right?
What's happening within the industry, beginning to adjust and provide counsel to clients. A lot of these days, Zoom calls or other video meetings, just to get updates from clients, provide them with counsel as to what they might want to be doing, giving them all perspective as to what we see emerging within the news cycle or issues of importance. So it's a pretty packed day. So the work day is primarily filled with conversations, and try to find that time between 6 and 8 to do some substantive thinking and development of recommendations, counsel, thought leadership work. And so on.
Is there a marketing trend you'd wish to go away? And don't say QR codes unless you really, really mean it.
I don't think there's any marketing. And QR codes have, I think, an interesting role to play. And I'll come back to that. I don't think there's a marketing trend that I'd like to see go away. I'd like to see marketing improve.
Right.
I think I'd like to see people take it more seriously. I think ultimately people are not taking marketing seriously enough. They don't realize to the extent of which their brand equity, how it impacts their business, and how it's changing with or without their participation organically every day. And, to place more attention and focus on gaining control of that. I think QR codes have opened up an interesting door because, when we talked about ad tech or advertising coming to a reckoning, it's fascinating that in an industry that is predicated on innovation and evolution, when it comes down to it, advertising is really the same type of concept that it has been since Bolivo ran, their ad how many years ago that was on the World Series for the first televised commercial. It's still predicated on disrupting viewer experience for delivery of information, whether they want it or not. And, I think the reckoning that's coming in, I think data and technology is enabling this, is reconceptualization of what advertising is or could be. How do we deliver better value to the consumer, not just through more relevant advertising, but how do we make that experience more valuable to them? And QR codes is interesting in that it provides some degree of engagement or investment of the viewer within the creative, provides potentially some type of value. I know shoppable advertising is certainly an important trend. It'd be interesting to see how that emerges, if it's properly utilized. And how that might lead to just looking at what commercial advertising is in a much different way, or even delivery of content in a much different way. So I think we're going to come to a point where we really all do need to step back and think about this incredible advertising ecosystem, what it is, what is really the value with the viewer, how do we establish a stronger relationship so it produces better value for them and ultimately becomes more effective. I think that's coming down the pike. I think some of the pressures that we're facing, certainly in data collection, data utilization, targeting, is going to force a lot of reconsideration about how we go about our business. But, ultimately, it's going to be healthy. Because what happens is, if people are not forced to do the hard thinking about how do we change things, how do we do something better, they don't. Because you're just so focused upon maintenance and operation of your business. And sometimes you need things like cookie deprecation to force you to sit back and say, okay, how can we do this better? How can we do this differently? And I think, you know, to an extent, there are good events that are catalysts. I think a lot of these marketing trends that emerge and go away also serve that purpose because they force a degree of reflection.
If you could have any marketing superpower, what would it be? Mind, time travel, or something even cooler?
Oh, it would be mind control. So people are more readily accepting of counsel and advice and understanding when they need to be doing something. In a crisis, we do a lot of crisis comms work. Crisis comms is such a good example of that, is that when the crisis hits, people either underreact or overreact. Because they haven't done the hard thinking in advance as to what would constitute a crisis, which is ultimately crisis is.
I always think of Steve Wynn,
yeah.
how they underreacted, how they just assumed another Vegas scandal, and it wasn't,
and it wasn't.
Every blog, every reporter had been hearing these things for years. So once they had
inability to step back and take a look at it from a macro perspective, if I could influence more people to listen to counsel and to think about things more from a macro level in terms of how this might impact their business of all of us, that'd be the superpower that I'd love to have. I mean, it's not mind reading. Because the research that goes into things is so informative, not just because of what people say, but how they say it, where they've said it, why they've said it. So you're not going to get that from mind reading. It's interesting. People sometimes act without understanding why they've taken certain actions that they have. So I think in certain respects, effective and thorough research is more telling than being able to read someone's mind, because sometimes people don't even know what they themselves are thinking or why they act the way that they do.
I like to ask everyone, if you could send yourself a time-traveling text message that you give your younger self, what would you tell yourself besides invest in Google, or maybe just something like buy more comfortable office chairs?
Yeah, well, would have been buy real estate. That would have been the way to go, especially here in New York.
Oh, yeah.
I think this would be true of all folks at a certain age. The message I would have sent myself was, there's not as much time as you think there is. You're not too young to take advantage of things or to pursue things. You know, like when I was teaching the kids at Stern, they have no fear.
Right. Was that a good experience?
It was some, and we brought a number of the kids in here to serve as interns, but they had no hesitancy in terms of expression of ideas, really interest, innovative ways of looking at things. I mean, they were not constrained by someone having told them, no, you can't think this way, or this is not the right way to think. You know, to act upon that at a younger age and not assume I've got time, act faster, act younger, I think would be the message I would have sent myself.
And that wraps up another episode of The Adotit Show. Thank you for joining us on this insightful journey with Bill.D, exploring the intersections of marketing, PR, and ad tech. And special thanks to Troutman and Men for your awesome sponsorship. We couldn't do this without you. Until next time, stay curious, stay bold, and know more than you did yesterday.